As Trump and Putin head to Alaska, Hillary Clinton makes a shocking admission ahead of their meeting.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. It's Friday, August 15th. Welcome to the broadcast. Will Haynes is joining me in studio right now. And of course, we are all monitoring as closely as we can, though nothing has really gotten started just yet, that Alaska summit between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. This is going to be a big moment. It could be very long. It could be very short. We know President Trump even has hinted at, look, if it's going well, they'll do some kind of press conference. They'll make some conversation pieces. I'll let you know what happened. If it's not going well, he may just walk out and maybe over very quickly. We will keep you abreast of that. I don't think a lot of that's going to come up during the show today because we are still waiting on even the arrival, I believe, of President Trump right now to Alaska. So there's probably still some time ahead. I'd love to get your thoughts on that, though, at 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. How do you feel about this summit happening right now between President Trump and Vladimir Putin? Do you think this could be successful? Are you happy that President Trump has decided to do this and meet with someone who is largely not loved in the world right now with Vladimir Putin? But also, just a bit of fun out of this, Hillary Clinton, Will, I wish, you know, if we lived in the olden times, if we lived in the Pony Express era, if we lived in the era of the Founding Fathers, this statement would be outrageous. Of course, we can hear the tone, we can hear sarcasm, you can hear some of the verbiage that's coming out, but also shows the lack of trust and the lack of sincerity coming from people on the other side of the aisle, if you will. And this was from Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was on Jessica Tarlov's podcast, which actually I probably would like to hear. I think there could
it's
be an interesting
Raging Moderates. That's the name of the podcast.
And you're going to have Hillary Clinton on.
Right.
But I actually wouldn't mind hearing Jessica Tarlov. You know, I'd say she goes into the lion's den, if you will, pretty much every week or every day. So you know what? Good for her. She's a podcast and she had Hillary on. Let's just take a listen to what they had to say.
We are on the precipice of a meeting between President Trump and President Putin in Alaska. Drawing on your experience as Secretary of State, if you were en route to Alaska, what would you be looking to get? What does an acceptable deal look like?
He is not meeting with a friend. He is meeting with an adversary, and an adversary who wants to see the destruction of the United States and the Western Alliance. But if he could bring about the end to this terrible war, where Putin is the aggressor, invading a neighbor country, trying to change the borders, if he could end it without putting Ukraine in a position where it had to concede its territory to the aggressor, had to, in a way, validate Putin's vision of Greater Russia, but instead could really stand up to Putin to make it clear there must be a ceasefire, there will be no exchange of territory, and that over a period of time, Putin should be actually withdrawing from the territory he seized in order to demonstrate good faith efforts, let us say, not to threaten European security. If President Trump were the architect of that, I'd nominate him for a Nobel Peace Prize.
She nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. Obviously says it with a bit of sarcasm, but you know what? Goes into pretty much more detail than I was expecting, to be honest, of what she expects him or would like him to do. It is not dissimilar to what a lot of people want. There's a lot of people are saying they cannot give up land. Ukraine cannot do that. Of course, President Trump wants to figure out just a way to end the war. Whatever that looks like, I think will be determined by somewhere. Hopefully they can meet some, I guess you'd say, in the middle of this. No one's really sure what that's going to look like. But of course, that's coming from Hillary Clinton.
Well, and as you
the
look
big
at
reset
it too,
button.
She sets, yes, she had such a great record with Russia with the reset button.
Is this the same reset close enough?
If you look at this, she sets the bar very high for why she would nominate him for a Nobel Peace Prize, but I think it would be pretty unanimous. But once again, this is a war. I don't think anyone actually expects the details she laid out to be the final resolution to this, because there is territory that has been taken. It wouldn't be Ukraine ceding that territory anymore because Russia had taken it over. It would have to be Russia at that point ceding it. So we'll get into a little bit more of this in the next segment.
Give us a call because we're going to be bouncing around today, playing some stuff from earlier in the week, but we're also live right now. We're going to be live for a few segments. We're going to come back. So give us a call. We're going to take more questions or comments in the next segment. 1-800-684-3110. Of course, have your donations doubled right now during our 35 years of victory drive. We are halfway done. Be a part of it right now.
For 35 years, the ACLJ has fought and won for life, liberty, and religious freedom. Since 1990, the ACLJ has established a legacy of victory, defending constitutional rights, protecting innocent life, and standing for freedom. From our offices in Washington, France, Jerusalem, and Pakistan, we've achieved major legal victories for organizations, churches, businesses, and families and individuals just like you. We've stood on Capitol Hill and before the U.S. Supreme Court and traveled all the way to the United Nations, helping to shape laws and policies at the highest levels. Now we face new battles, from saving persecuted Christians to defending pro-life laws at the Supreme Court. But we can't do it without you. This month, every dollar you give is doubled through our 35 years of victory drive. Be part of this critical moment. Give now at aclj.org/win. That's aclj.org/win.
Hey everyone, this is Jordan Seculo. You've spoken and we've heard you loud and clear. That's why this month we're doing something big. We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you, our ACLJ members, have told us matter the most to you, life and religious liberty. We're redoubling our efforts to beat back the radical left's attack on your constitutional religious freedoms and to defend the sanctity of human life. Life and liberty are the cornerstones of our great nation, but they're not guaranteed. When the values we hold dear are under attack, it's up to all of us to take a stand or risk losing them forever. This is not just a call to fund our legal battles. This is your moment to get in the fight. Just as before, every tax-deductible gift will be doubled, dollar for dollar, through the ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive, giving you twice the impact to defend your freedoms and help us fight to literally save lives. Join the ACLJ in the fight to keep America free.
Welcome back to Seculo. We are going to take your phone calls in this segment. So if you want to call in, go ahead and call in right now, 1-800-684-3110. We are obviously talking about what everyone's talking about, the Trump-Putin summit that's going to happen today, this afternoon. We'll unfortunately be off the air by then, but we'll give you a full breakdown on everything we learn back on Monday. But Will, I think there's a lot of anticipation for this. I don't want people to get their hopes up too much. President Trump even said, hey, there's a 25% chance nothing comes from this. But what they actually hope is that this leads to meeting number two with Vladimir Zelensky, not just a meeting with President Trump and Putin.
That's right. And this came together very quickly. This idea was just about a week ago. Last Friday, we were even talking about it could happen next week. And they were able to pull together a summit of world leaders very quickly. Normally, those things, because of protocols and all the staff involved, are things that they work for months on. They pulled this together in a week. It's happening in Alaska at an Air Force base or a joint military base there. They're going to come together at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And then around 3:30 is when the one-on-one meeting starts. So there'll be the pageantry and the greetings and the handshaking around 3. 3:30, President Trump, President Putin, and their translators will have a very small meeting. So it's just the two principals and then the translators around 3:30 Eastern. Larger gathering, probably with more cabinet level and things.
Well, it's interesting. I think we should hear from President Trump because he actually brought up some of the people that Vladimir Putin's bringing, not necessarily all cabinet. We're actually some business executives from Russia. Let's take a listen. This is President Trump on Air Force One just a little bit ago.
We get along. There's a good respect level on both sides. And I think, you know, something's going to come of it. I notice he's bringing a lot of business people from Russia. And that's good. I like that because they want to do business, but they're not doing business until we get the war settled.
Are you going to talk about business?
Will
you talk
business? We have the hottest country on earth. We have the hottest economy on earth. We have the hottest country. We just set a new stock market record again. We have hundreds of billions of dollars flowing in from tariffs. We're the hottest country. We were a dead country, a dead like doornails, a dead country. 1 year ago, we were dead as a doornail, and now we have the hottest country. And he wants a piece of that because his country is not hot economically. In fact, it's the opposite. And China's not doing well economically, but I want everybody to do well. The war's got to stop and the killing's got to stop.
Well, and to that point as well, as we talk about that larger gathering after the 3:30 face-to-face and then a joint news conference. So this could be multiple hours long, or it could end up very quickly. As they said, the White House has not shied away from the fact if it's not going well, and President Trump said, I'll know in the first few minutes, I'll walk out. Yeah. But also, I want to bring up this point as well. President Trump told reporters, I'm not here to negotiate for Ukraine. I'm here to get them to the table. So the expectations of this, even back to Hillary Clinton's comment about if he can do all this.
We're
this,
not ending the war today.
That's not going to happen today. He's getting there to start to mediate, bring a resolution to the war and killing. And also, he brings up that Russia's bringing all those business people and everyone wants to do business with the U.S. The economic pain points the U.S. can put on Russia are probably the greatest asset and tool that we have in our toolbox in getting them to the table, because they want to be economically prosperous. And when you bring that tool set of tariffs and sanctions, and even with their trading partners, that's where you can start to put real pain on the Russian economy, and why this negotiation starts with, let's get them to the table.
Yeah, people are asking, will it be broadcast live? The actual meeting, I don't believe, will be anywhere close to live, but we will have press conferences.
Right.
There will be things live that will be presented to the press. So expect to see the two of them together, for sure. Photo ops and all of that going around. We have a question that's coming in. A phone call is coming in from Angelo on YouTube in Tennessee. I want to take his call because I think there's a very easy answer to this. Go ahead.
My question is I just don't understand how he's able to, President Trump is able to make this happen so quickly and so efficiently when other leaders have just failed so epically. It's just mind-blowing.
Politics, Angelo, that's what happened, is that President Biden refused to even take a call from Vladimir Putin. So guess what? This could have happened 4 years ago. This could have happened 2 years ago, 3 years ago when the war started. But they decided, let's take a political moral high ground, choose our side. And look, I'm not saying that Russia wasn't the aggressor. They obviously were. Choose our moral side, and with that says, well, we can't even talk to them. We can't even sit down with them. President Trump doesn't play that way. We've seen that with his meetings with Kim Jong-un. We've seen that meeting with people who, yeah, sitting down with them. As Rick Grenell said, you can sit down with them across the table from them and be diplomats. You don't have to be best friends. And it's something that I feel like our politicians have gotten really, or not politicians, our media has gotten really skewed, and some of our politicians as well, which is just because you meet with somebody. I mean, look, you have to meet to end a war, typically.
Well, and here's this cynicism.
Grant Lee met to end the war.
The cynicism in Hillary Clinton's statement is she sets all these high bar things that would be a major success. But what she fails to even bring up is like, look, even the president I served under Secretary of State of, that's when Crimea was taken by Russia. And then Ukraine was invaded fully during Joe Biden. So it's acting as if like he's going to fail at this. In the cynicism there, fails to see reality that these moments of aggression happened under the Democrat presidencies, both Barack Obama and Joe Biden. And instead of them doing a thing like going and having a summit, trying to figure it out, they did the opposite of that. They didn't talk to the aggressor and say, hey, maybe you shouldn't be doing this. They encouraged this war to go on even longer by not having a stronger diplomatic voice, by not having the ability to do things outside the box, like a summit, to actually get down to the real issues. And so that, I think, can't be lost as well, is that everyone's sitting here saying, like, there's a good chance this fails. You're seeing members of the Senate and Congress that are Democrats saying, he's going to fail. There's no way that they're going to get a peace deal today. First of all, he's not even setting that expectation.
Like the opposite.
But on top of that, the fact that they are able to go out there and just trumpet this and praise the fact of their, oh, he doesn't know what he's going to do. He can't even handle Putin. Joe Biden wouldn't even talk to the man. That tells you a lot about leadership. When you won't go sit in the room and try to sort something out and get people to the table. That was not leadership we saw under the last 4 years. This is a completely different era. And to the caller's question, why is he able to do it so quickly? Because he's willing to lead on these issues. He's willing to be a moderator in this issue instead of only sending weapons and only slightly propping up Ukraine, but not enough for it to really end the war. And then slow rolling that, spending American taxpayer dollars and not actually doing some of the things that you need to do to bring an end to it.
Yeah, let's take a call. Let's go to Ronald, South Carolina. Watch it on Rumble. Go ahead, Ronald.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. And Will literally just made a comment that I was actually going to make, and that's the fact that, yes, she has made a lot of lofty points to be brought out in this summit, but not actually realizing that it was Biden that brought, that allowed this war to take place in the first place and allow all this thing to fall on in the lap of the European nations.
Ronald, things were fairly calm, if you don't remember. I mean, yes, obviously, they weren't necessarily calm within our country because of COVID and everything that had happened leading out of 2020. I don't want to pretend like none of that happened. But you can at least say from a world stage, whether it was the Middle East, whether it was Russia, I don't think anyone was sitting around really worrying about it. I don't think we were sitting around thinking about it. The Middle East was calm as it's been in my lifetime. Russia was a blip on the radar, if you will, of whatever was going on. We knew that there's obviously issues with Putin, but it wasn't a big deal. There wasn't an imminent war. But then when you had President Biden come in, it really all erupted. And I warned you of that. Go back and find the tapes. I warned you that the Middle East would become another hotbed of terror, that we would be talking about this very soon. And guess what? You jumped forward only about a year, and all of a sudden, all of it was back. And maybe worse so, all kind of culminating with that Afghanistan withdrawal that then led to just, really, I think even you could say, led to the ineptitude of it, led to the war in Gaza, and led to Hamas and other terrorist regimes really feeling they could really make a moment where America was not going to get behind and help. So you can look at that. You're absolutely right. What Hillary Clinton said, it's a lot of good goals. They're lofty. They're good goals. And they're goals that would have been very easy, I'd say, to get done just a handful of years ago.
And you have to think about as well that the double standard that they play with every sort of negotiation, if they are able to pull off weak deals like the Iran nuclear deal, which enriched an enemy and led to, we saw how that played out. The cash flow that Iran got from the failed nuclear deal, which did not stop them from enriching uranium, did not stop them from getting closer to a nuclear weapon, also allowed them to perpetrate terror across the Middle East in things like October 7th through their proxies and the Houthis. Meanwhile, they love that. They praise the JCPOA, but someone being willing to go and talk to Russia, also because they conditioned everyone to think of Russia as the great Satan through their entire Russiagate hoax, even some goals aren't able to be done with praise from the left.
In the next segment, we're going to step back just a couple days. I want you to hear some of the great work the ACLJ is doing. We're not going anywhere. We're going to be back live in just a few minutes. But I just wanted to make sure on this Friday that we could go back and you could hear about the incredible work as we are still now halfway through our 35 years of victory drive. And I need you to be a part of it. Donate today and have your gift doubled. That's only through the end of the month, and you need to do it today.
Hey, everyone. This is Jordan Seculo. You've spoken, and we've heard you loud and clear. That's why this month we're doing something big. We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you, our ACLJ members, have told us matter the most to you, life and religious liberty. We're redoubling our efforts to beat back the radical left's attack on your constitutional religious freedoms and to defend the sanctity of human life. Life and liberty are the cornerstones of our great nation, but they're not guaranteed. When the values we hold dear are under attack, it's up to all of us to take a stand or risk losing them forever. This is not just a call to fund our legal battles. This is your moment to get in the fight. Just as before, every tax-deductible gift will be doubled, dollar for dollar, through the ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive, giving you twice the impact to defend your freedoms and help us fight to literally save lives. Join the ACLJ in the fight to keep America free.
For 35 years, the ACLJ has fought and won for life, liberty, and religious freedom. Since 1990, the ACLJ has established a legacy of victory, defending constitutional rights, protecting innocent life, and standing for freedom. From our offices in Washington, France, Jerusalem, and Pakistan, we've achieved major legal victories for organizations, churches, businesses, and families and individuals just like you. We've stood on Capitol Hill and before the U.S. Supreme Court and traveled all the way to the United Nations, helping to shape laws and policies at the highest levels. Now we face new battles, from saving persecuted Christians to defending pro-life laws at the Supreme Court. But we can't do it without you. This month, every dollar you give is doubled through our 35 years of victory drive. Be part of this critical moment. Give now at aclj.org/win. That's aclj.org/win.
Look, phone lines are open for you, 1-800-684-3110. I know that last caller spurred a lot of people to call in and talk about the housing crisis that's happening. That's obviously not mainly what our topic is today. That's okay. If you want to call in and talk about it, look, I understand it's on your mind, it's on your heart. You want to deal with it, maybe have someone to talk to about it. It's totally fine. Phone lines are open at 1-800-684-3110. But I also wanted to tie in a bit how the work of the ACLJ, what we're doing in court, really ties into all of this as you know, the chaos in the streets may not be taken care of, but the street preacher who may be out there, you know, we got to make sure that he's taken care of and he's stopped.
Yeah, we had to file a federal civil rights lawsuit against the city of Chicago. That was earlier this year. Three young Christian men preaching in a park. You know, and so this is what the police were focusing on in Chicago, and a city that kind of becomes the city that is like number one on the list of dangerous places or places where crime has gotten out of control.
Yeah, there, so, Memphis.
The numbers might go up and down, but we know that Chicago has an issue, and certain areas of Chicago have an issue. And what we wanted to point out is while we're fighting these battles, that's the police are obviously saying we're prioritizing that. We're going to prioritize three peaceful street preachers. And we're gonna focus on them instead of the violent criminals who are actually terrorizing the streets. Maybe some people don't like to hear the message of the street preacher. You know what? It's not a bullet. No one is being killed. No one's losing their life. No one is losing their mom or their dad or their children because of those street preachers. That's again refocusing the resources. But we're having to fight these in court. This is not over.
That's right. And Jordan, once again, you talk about this civil case. We just filed our response to the city's motion to dismiss. So we're waiting for the next steps now that we have filed there. But there is a criminal case for two of the defendants. We got the charges dropped for one of them earlier in the year. But the other two, there is a criminal trial 1 month from today. So while we just filed that response to the motion to dismiss in the civil side, we're actually, our attorneys are working today to prepare for trial in Chicago on criminal charges of basically trying to criminalize their free speech and their right to share the gospel. When, as we point out, you look wherever you turn, the large cities have their priorities wrong. They're not going after the violent criminals. They're going after the peaceful people exercising their First Amendment right.
Just to prove the point, so right after securing that first win and seeing all the charges dismissed for one of the individuals, the other two got arrested just days later. Same location, identical circumstances, exact location. So to say that that's not a pattern by the police force, or at least that department is not putting that as a priority, instead of really focusing in on the bad actors, the violent criminals, the drug dealers, the people that are causing actual crime, instead of those who are speaking the message of the gospel, which is what we're used to seeing in public areas and cities and towns across the country. That's the First Amendment. But instead, I think, you know, to one extent, it's these police forces don't even want to go into some of these areas anymore. So they're looking for other ways to justify their existence, and they're making arrests of street preachers instead of going into areas that, unfortunately, and I think that just speaks to the problem, they have to risk their own lives just to go into those areas.
And Jordan, just to show you also the work of the ACLJ and to our audience, that even today in another matter, and these are matters where people are expressing their freedom of speech within their constitutional right. Many times they try to follow the ordinances to the letter. They have done their homework so that they aren't running afoul of the law. But this is another one in Carbondale, Illinois, where these were pro-life protesters. We also know about the pro-life protesters that were facing criminal charges in Ohio that we've been defending. But this is one where it was a group of people that were expressing with signs their opposition to an abortion clinic. And like all of these, The police get called, and then the city continues to try to move forward on some sort of charges or things. This one didn't get to that point because of our lawyers' interventions. But now we have a suit against the city, and there's an evidentiary hearing today on a preliminary injunction to try and stop them from enforcing against pro-life speech. So I just wanted to put out there as well, our attorneys today have a preliminary injunction, evidentiary hearing today in court. So we are fighting, while the president is fighting against the way that these cities are being run and trying to get law and order back as the focus, we are also making sure we defend these clients with no cost to the client because of the support of our ACLJ members and champions. But we have to also do this work so that we can put it into it where their focus is redirected back to what their jobs are.
Yeah. And I think that's part of what our job is going to be at the ACLJ, is making sure it's not the actual officers in uniform. They are carrying out directives from their leadership. And so what we have to make sure is that the leadership knows, by filing these lawsuits, you need to refocus on your actual job. You know, your actual job is to keep people safe. But, you know, from time to time again, since the founding of the ACLJ, Logan, we've seen that local police officers love to go against the peaceful protester. Or in this case, just the sidewalk preacher. And I would just imagine in this day and age, when I drive down the road, if I see someone who's got the sign out and is making their message known, in most places, there's eight other things the police should be looking at in that area than that person.
Yeah, this is the kind of easy pickings, if you will, because they can just do it. They know they're not going to get that much pushback, at least in the moment. But, of course, that is why we are here, to make sure that does become a bit more uncomfortable to take on these. You can't hit a quota if you are just trying to arrest the street preachers in your area, but not actually take care of the people that are on your streets, or take care of the issues of crime that are happening. No, you're going to go after the ones who are legally doing what you're allowed to do on a public sidewalk, but you know that it's going to, you know, cause a ruckus. It is something that we always have been standing up for here at the ACLJ. It's nothing new, but it's a continual battle. It's a continual battle also to make sure we're educating our law enforcement, to make sure they understand also what they can do and what they can't do, who they can arrest, who they should arrest and cannot arrest. Because sometimes it is not on them. Sometimes it's on their superior, who tells them, hey, we think, you know, if you see a street preacher out there, they're not allowed to do that. If they have a bullhorn, or if they have some kind of amplification system, you know, there are rules. So make sure to shut this down. And the ACLJ team is always ready to take action. And if it's within the rules, obviously, we are going to make sure that they are supported. And again, none of that happens without you. None of that happens without your support. And though we are, you know, pushing right now, and you maybe hear me push a lot about this 35 years of victory, some point later this week, you're even going to hear from some of the people who had those victories occur to them, some of them in that 35 years, and some of them back at the very beginning, and hear how it impacts their life now and how it even impacts the American people now. So I encourage you, one of the things we like to talk about here also is people who become ACLJ champions. Those are people that are champions. That means they give on essentially a membership basis. They give every month reoccurring. It just automatically charges you. Obviously, you can cancel at any time. And we don't have set a standard of what an ACLJ champion is. I think the minimum gift is $5 a month. And that's just because of processing fees and all of that. Beyond that, a champion is a champion. If you give that $5, by the way, it becomes $10. If you give $1,000 this month, it becomes $2,000. Understand that your first gift is not doubled in your charge. It's doubled because someone else, another person who understands the impact the last 35 years have happened on the America, on America, on Europe, on Israel. Look, that's a whole other situation that was unfolding over the weekend. We can get into that as well. Phone lines are open for you, though, at 1-800-684-3110. As we head into the second half hour of the show, if you don't get us on your local station, easiest thing to do is just go to aclj.org or download the ACLJ app. There you'll be able to find all the broadcasts, whether we're live, whether you're listening to this later on. And, of course, you can always find us live noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Salem News Channel, on YouTube, on Rumble, and again at aclj.org. Archive later on, wherever you get your podcasts. And with that, second half hour is coming right up, and I want to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back. Less than a minute break.
For 35 years, the ACLJ has fought and won for life, liberty, and religious freedom. Now we face new battles, from saving persecuted Christians to defending pro-life laws at the Supreme Court. But we can't do it without you. This month, every dollar you give is doubled through our 35 years of victory drive. Be part of this critical moment. Give now at aclj.org/win. That's aclj.org/win.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. Hope you enjoyed that. I wanted you to hear more about the work of the ACLJ, everything we're doing, and for my brother, Jordan Seculo. We want to kick things off, though, in this second half hour. Will, I know we got a call coming in. We'll make sure we take that. But, of course, we're all right now talking about the Trump-Putin meeting that is happening. Probably in the next couple hours it'll be happening. There is some format. We'll know a lot more tonight about whether anything was successful or not. We don't plan or anticipate any sort of ceasefire talks, but decisions being made or anything like that. This is more round one, which should head into, hopefully, into a round two. And of course, we're talking about Hillary Clinton saying, if he's able to accomplish all this, go through a litany of different things, but really was just creating peace in this region. Heck, she would even nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize, President Trump.
Well, what I think is interesting here and what the media is having fun with at this point is trying to already predispose everyone for a failure. Get you right. Ready to accept a failure. He didn't get a peace deal signed today when even he himself, the president of the United States, said, I'm not here to negotiate for Ukraine. I'm here to get them to the table. So he understands this is a longer process. He knows that this doesn't end today. So when you're hearing Democrat senators, when you're hearing Hillary Clinton saying, if he can pull this off, I'll give him the Nobel, I'll nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize. They're being disingenuous because that's not even what this is. This is the beginning of a mediation between two parties. And with him going in with that mindset, I think that does actually open the door for it to be successful, to get it to that next stage, because he can go in there and say, I'm not here on behalf of Ukraine. I'm here on behalf of the United States and the world because we need this war to end. And that opens the door for a lot of different possibilities and ways for it to go. But the media is already trying to get you convinced, no matter what, it's a failure if there's not a peace agreement signed today, which isn't even the point of the summit.
All right, let's go ahead and take this call before we get to the next segment. Kevin, California, you're on the air.
Biden could not. It's not that Biden didn't want to talk to Putin. Biden couldn't talk to Putin. Biden couldn't talk to the media. Trump has this skill of international negotiation. Biden and Obama could not. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Iranian deal, they could only give away things. Trump is a negotiator on the world stage. Biden and Obama, they could only do like things here internally in America where they'd had no conflict. They could just sign something and put it into effect.
Kevin, I think that's a very good point. Is that President Trump has been dealing with different cultures, different regulations on the world stage for most of his life in the world of constructions and resorts and all the different deals that he has done through time. It's why you saw when they had the big deal with him on the roof, scouting the location and looking at it from the new ballroom. It's like, yeah, that's clearly where the guy feels the most comfortable.
Right.
This is where his business has been running the entire time. He was not a politician. So you can say what you want about him, whether he knows what he's talking about or doesn't know what he's talking about on the politics side or has issues there. When it comes to getting a deal done and negotiations with world leaders and with people, again, who don't necessarily agree with you on a lot of states, look at how many Trump buildings there are across the world or have been in the past. These aren't easy deals to come up with. So to sit down with Vladimir Putin, you're right. You have to have a certain level of understanding of how other cultures work. And I don't know if though President Biden and President Obama had certainly, I'd say President Biden more than Obama, had their share of time working with world leaders, nothing on the level of doing business with world leaders like President Trump has done.
Well, and also when you hear the cynicism in their voice, the way that they will make light of it and say, well, I would nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize if he could pull that off. What happened to a country where we could really hope for the best from the leader going to try to end a war instead of basically mocking it and saying, you're going to fail no matter what? That we don't need that.
All right. I want to take a second here. We're halfway through the point of really the halfway through right there in our 35 years of victory drive. And we're behind. I'll be honest. We need to be raising a little bit more money right now. We really could use your support. And as you think about how you could support the work of the ACLJ, if you're brand new and you've never watched us before, all I do is encourage you to subscribe if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble. But if you are an existing person who has enjoyed this show for years, likes what we've been doing, loves our legal work, I encourage you right now, even if it's another donation, make a donation right now. Your donation will be doubled through the end of the month. If you become a champion, that's someone that gives on a monthly basis, that first one becomes doubled. And know how much we really appreciate that. I appreciate all of you that have become champions before as we celebrate 35 years of victory.
For 35 years, the ACLJ has fought and won for life, liberty, and religious freedom. Since 1990, the ACLJ has established a legacy of victory, defending constitutional rights, protecting innocent life, and standing for freedom. From our offices in Washington, France, Jerusalem, and Pakistan, we've achieved major legal victories for organizations, churches, businesses, and families and individuals just like you. We've stood on Capitol Hill and before the U.S. Supreme Court and traveled all the way to the United Nations, helping to shape laws and policies at the highest levels. Now we face new battles, from saving persecuted Christians to defending pro-life laws at the Supreme Court. But we can't do it without you. This month, every dollar you give is doubled through our 35 years of victory drive. Be part of this critical moment. Give now at aclj.org/win. That's aclj.org/win.
Hey everyone, this is Jordan Seculo. You've spoken and we've heard you loud and clear. That's why this month we're doing something big. We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you, our ACLJ members, have told us matter the most to you, life and religious liberty. We're redoubling our efforts to beat back the radical left's attack on your constitutional religious freedoms and to defend the sanctity of human life. Life and liberty are the cornerstones of our great nation, but they're not guaranteed. When the values we hold dear are under attack, it's up to all of us to take a stand or risk losing them forever. This is not just a call to fund our legal battles. This is your moment to get in the fight. Just as before, every tax-deductible gift will be doubled, dollar for dollar, through the ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive, giving you twice the impact to defend your freedoms and help us fight to literally save lives. Join the ACLJ in the fight to keep America free.
Welcome back to Seculo. My dad, Jay Seculo, is joining us via phone right now. We wanted to chat with him. And, of course, we are celebrating 35 years of victory right now at the ACLJ. And, Dad, of course, this is a moment. Will, why don't you give us like a 10, 20-second reset so all the people who are joining us right now, because we see the numbers are skyrocketing right now on YouTube and on Rumble. Give us a little bit of a reset of what we're talking about, and let's get your feedback, Dad.
That's right. So it appears Kash Patel, as director of the FBI, discovered 302 interview forms from the FBI where a whistleblower was coming forward from the House Intelligence Committee that worked for the Democrats, trying to get the FBI to do something about the fact that Adam Schiff was purposefully and directing the staff to leak classified intelligence to the media for the purpose of getting an indictment against President Trump. The FBI under the Chris Wray era, as well as the Biden era, this individual gave about four interviews to the FBI on this very subject, did nothing about it. And a lot of that had to do with what they pushed back and said, we don't know if we have any angle here because of speech and debate clause. But now the American public is seeing this because Director Patel has declassified it and given it over to Congress, who has now given it to John Solomon at Just the News.
Dad, you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So the first thing I think you have to realize here is this. Number one, and I think this is critical, this was a Democratic staff member who gave the information to the FBI, who was then interviewed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation on three separate occasions that we know of. As Will mentioned, the 302 is the form that the FBI utilizes when they interview. These are the notes taken by the FBI agents. Kash Patel is confirmed as the FBI director, gets this information probably in the normal course of review. This was from 2017. And this individual alleges that Adam Schiff leaked classified documents to the media on purpose, knowing they were classified, to tarnish President Trump. Now, of course, I know firsthand what was going on in this because we represented the president at that point. And here's the key thing that I think you have to remember, Logan. This is what happens when weaponization of an agency takes place. And the Democrats went after President Trump with a vengeance, both while in office and then when we had President Biden. They indicted the former president of the United States in jurisdictions, alleging, by the way, the same kind of handling of classified documents. How come the president, if President Trump gets indicted for it and Adam Schiff, nothing happens? Well, I think that's about to change. So what happens now is once this information is out, there will be further investigations. A grand jury should then be impaneled, and that grand jury should then, if the evidence supports it, bring a charge for violating a number of federal statutes here.
So many people have been pointing to the speech and debate clause in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 6, Clause 1, which says that the members of both houses of Congress may be privileged from arrest during their attendance of the session of their respected houses. And it goes on to say, and for any speech and debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. Some of the reporting is that the whistleblower, that's the pushback he got. That, and we know that many members of Congress have used the well of the Senate or the floor of the House to speak things into the record that would otherwise not be allowed to be put out there. Maybe it be classified documents or something of that nature. And that is a protection that the Constitution gives. However, if you're directing staff to leak classified documents, how far does this protection of speech and debate extend in a case like this?
Now, this had nothing to do with the speech and debate clause, though. I mean, that's the first go-to that anybody that serves in Congress utilizes. That can't, by the way, the speech and debate clause has been litigated a number of times. Here's the issue on the speech and debate clause. First of all, it wasn't on the floor of the Senate. That's in your House, number one. Number two, it wasn't a speech and debate effort. It wasn't statements made in that context. This was a leak. This is what the allegation is by this whistleblower. This is a leak of classified information. That is not protected by the speech and debate clause, because if it was, America's national security would be constantly in jeopardy. So those that say speech and debate, nonsense. This is, if the allegations are true, and based on what I have seen in the past, nothing would surprise me here.
And nothing would surprise you,
then this is, go ahead.
No. I thought you were done there. I was saying, a lot of people are asking then, so then what happens? This is always the big question, which is, we've uncovered all this information. Cash Patel said, here it all is. You know, there'll be referrals. There'll be all this. What's the true next step? Because Adam Schiff, we know, has even bigger plans, bigger hopes for his political career. And this, you know, could this result in anything?
Well, it sure could. I mean, they've got, first of all, under Pam Bondi, the Department of Justice has set up a task force on weaponization of federal agencies. As I said, a grand jury could be impaneled as the evidence warrants, and that grand jury could issue an indictment. Adam Schiff isn't immune from the law. These are the ones that scream about nobody's above the law, yet that when they are involved in activities, they immediately try to hide behind a speech and debate clause. And by the way, I don't think there's anything wrong with having a speech and debate clause. I think the sure. founders were right. But it has nothing to do with this issue whatsoever. If, in fact, the allegations are true, a crime was committed.
And when you think about the way that Director Gabbard has laid this out, seeing the ways that intelligence was manipulated and then changed in order to frame a narrative against the president at the direction of President Barack Obama at the time, and then you saw the way that James Comey had a part in this, now we're seeing that the Intelligence Committee, the Democrats there, were specifically playing a role in this. This is where that grand conspiracy investigation seems to really take place, where you're seeing multiple branches of the government in coordination trying to go after someone who is elected by the people. And it also harkens back to when Chuck Schumer said, you better not go after the intelligence community because they have 6 ways from Sunday to get back at you. All of this points to some sort of coup and grand conspiracy against President Trump.
Well, we know that, of course, from what happened during the 4 years in his first term. I mean, this was a constant attack. It was whether it was an impeachment, whether it was the nonsense with Bob Mueller, that whole situation. And Adam Schiff stoking, saying he has seen the evidence, remember, mm-hmm. of Russia's collusion with the Trump campaign. And then there was none. This was a guy who made up a transcript of a conversation between the president of the United States and Vladimir Zelensky. He made it up. He made up the text. And he later admitted that it was just to, you know, make the point more clear. It's nonsense. So the end result of all of this, in my view, is a grand jury should be impaneled. That grand jury should look at the evidence as warranted. Indictments flow. if, in fact, the allegations have a probable cause factor, reasonable to move forward. And I believe it will be. I'm not surprised by any of this. I do want to remind people, President Trump has only been in office 8 months, Cash Patel less than that. So it's going to take some time here, but I think we're on the right track. I think people are going to be held accountable.
Well, Dad, before we let you go, I did want to spend a couple minutes here as we wrap up this segment with you. We're going to have CeCe Heil on in the next segment to talk about some of our pro-life work that's happening still around the country. We don't want people to forget about that, the incredible work of the ACLJ, though it all ties together, because we are celebrating those 35 years of victory. And I believe there'll be a video message from you, a new one that we'll be playing just a little bit later in the show today, so people can stay tuned for that. But I wanted you to take a minute to tell everyone why this is the time to give and why this is time to support.
Well, look, we're celebrating 35 years of victory, and none of that happens without the support of our friends that support the work of the ACLJ, whether you're an ACLJ champion who gives every month or someone who occasionally supports the work of the ACLJ, it makes a huge difference. I do want to say your support is critical. I look at the cases that are now coming in. They're complex. They're important. They have to be handled, and it takes expertise. We look at our media operations. As you say, Logan, frequently, you don't put things behind a paywall. It's available for our donors and supporters and friends to access. We want to keep it that way. So your support of the ACLJ here just makes a gigantic difference in our ability to continue this work, which I think, by the way, we're about to see some really big things about to happen. So your support of the ACLJ is absolutely critical. We encourage you to go to aclj.org and do that today.
That's right. You can do it right now, as he said, is aclj.org. Yeah, let's put that graphic back up. You can scan that QR code right now if you're watching. If you go to aclj.org, give any donation, it will be effectively doubled. Of course, you can go directly and you can read more about and see great video content about our victories over the years. You're going to hear from some of those previous clients in the coming weeks. aclj.org/victory. Again, that's aclj.org/victory, because we want you to know also a little bit of background information on not only what we're doing, but what we've done, what got us here. Some of you are brand new. I know a lot of you that watch on YouTube, you were, you know, in the last few years, or even the last few days, or the last few months, it's the first time you've ever seen us. There's probably half of you right now that have never seen us before. And of course, you can consider giving, and that'd be amazing. But if you're brand new and you've never seen us at all, what I always ask you to do is just hit that subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube. It does a lot. We're over 512,000 subscribers now on our YouTube channel. Understand that is incredible at getting the word out there. And millions watch each and every week. So when millions are watching and 500,000 plus are subscribing, we got to balance that number out. So you go ahead and subscribe. Be great. We're going to take your calls and comments coming up. And CeCe Heil will be joining us again about the ACLJ's pro-life work. Give me a call at 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Jordan Seculo. You've spoken and we've heard you loud and clear. That's why this month we're doing something big. We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you, our ACLJ members, have told us matter the most to you, life and religious liberty. We're redoubling our efforts to beat back the radical left's attack on your constitutional religious freedoms and to defend the sanctity of human life. Life and liberty are the cornerstones of our great nation, but they're not guaranteed. When the values we hold dear are under attack, it's up to all of us to take a stand or risk losing them forever. This is not just a call to fund our legal battles. This is your moment to get in the fight. Just as before, every tax-deductible gift will be doubled, dollar for dollar, through the ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive, giving you twice the impact to defend your freedoms and help us fight to literally save lives. Join the ACLJ in the fight to keep America free.
For 35 years, the ACLJ has fought and won for life, liberty, and religious freedom. Since 1990, the ACLJ has established a legacy of victory, defending constitutional rights, protecting innocent life, and standing for freedom. From our offices in Washington, France, Jerusalem, and Pakistan, we've achieved major legal victories for organizations, churches, businesses, and families and individuals just like you. We've stood on Capitol Hill and before the U.S. Supreme Court and traveled all the way to the United Nations, helping to shape laws and policies at the highest levels. Now we face new battles, from saving persecuted Christians to defending pro-life laws at the Supreme Court. But we can't do it without you. This month, every dollar you give is doubled through our 35 years of victory drive. Be part of this critical moment. Give now at aclj.org/win. That's aclj.org Mint.com/win.
Welcome to Seculo in the final segment of the broadcast today. Will Haynes here, joined by Jordan Seculo in studio. And we have John Solomon from Just the News joining us as well. And this is a new piece that you put out last night, John, about Comey's media mole told the FBI he shaped the Russia narrative, but needed discount to deny leaking intel. All this stems from an investigation by the FBI into classified information that was popping up in the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, and many other places. But what do these documents tell us, John, about James Comey and this relationship he had with Columbia University law professor Daniel Richman?
Well, what it tells you is that at taxpayer expense, James Comey brought a friend onto the payroll to be a special PR consultant and to go around the official press office of the FBI, which is also on our tax dollars dime, and trained in how to properly provide information to the news media so that laws aren't broken. And he's having discussions with reporters about classified information. And when he's asked, did you confirm or provide that information, he gives, I think, one of the great non-denial answers in American history. It's probably going to be up there with Bill Clinton's, depending what the meaning of the word is when he was trying to parse words about whether he had had an interview or had an affair or sexual relationship with his intern, Monica Lewinsky. That was probably the most famous one in the last 30 years. He says, well, I'm pretty sure I didn't confirm the intelligence, and I'm sure, comma, with a discount, comma, I didn't give him the classified documents. If you need a discount on your truthfulness to make that claim, it's a red flag to the FBI that maybe you haven't told them the whole story. And I think what you get to see now is that James Comey wasn't just trying to do good in the country. He wasn't trying to stand up to a president. All the narratives he's given us on his high and mighty media tours, he was worried about how he was being viewed, his reputation. And he brings a guy in, and that guy is having conversations with reporters about classified information. He doesn't dispute that. The question is, did he leak it? And the FBI ultimately couldn't tell from his answer whether he did or didn't. And the Justice Department ultimately, like almost all the leak cases of the last decade, we looked at six of them yesterday, no one actually gets punished. They always come to the same conclusion, which is, it looks like this happened, but we can't prove it.
And meanwhile, the president of the United States, who would have actually had the ability or authority to declassify things, gets a special counsel and charged for retaining classified documents, while all of these, their conclusion is, we don't know if we can prosecute anyone. There does seem to be this double standard. And I think that's what people have been concerned about, at least at Watch Our Broadcast, is that there is that double standard. But now we're going on 8 years in some of these cases. Where can justice be had? And John, is there anything that you see that could still happen to hold these individuals accountable?
Well, they say there is, and Pam Bondi has put in motion a process. First, there's a criminal case that's been written up by career officials under the direction of FBI Director Kash Patel that looks at the decade of weaponization as a grand conspiracy case. Same modus operandi. Democrat does something bad. Hillary Clinton with the foundation, Hillary Clinton with the emails. They project a fake scandal on Donald Trump called Russia collusion. Hunter Biden's got a Ukraine foreign influence problem and a tax problem. We're going to have an impeachment of Donald Trump for asking about it. Joe Biden has classified documents in his garage and in his UPenn office that he shouldn't have. Let's raid Donald Trump and make a criminal case of him first, and then we'll let Joe Biden walk. That is being looked at as an ongoing conspiracy case. Deprivation of civil liberties, perhaps obstruction of justice. In that scenario, you can go backwards to 2016 and charge people. Now, there's another scenario. In the cases of leaking, there is one statute. Most of the statutes on leaks are 5 years for classified information. But there's one statute that states that it's a 10-year if you can show that something was willing and knowing and willful. And I think in some of these leaks, you see people directing, if the account about Adam Schiff that I broke 2 days ago is true, Adam Schiff is directing his staff to do it. That seems to be knowing of willful. In fact, when the question of legality comes up, the whistleblower says they've already figured out, don't worry about it. The Justice Department will just say we'll be protected by the debate and speech costs, and we won't be prosecuted for leaking classified information. Sounds knowing and willful. We'll have to see if a grand jury believes that, whether the prosecutors believe it, whether the whistleblowers are credible. But there are some avenues for justice. I think the biggest avenue for all of us is at some point, these agencies have to be turned upside down. And the mindset that it's okay to bring your politics across the threshold of the door, something that didn't happen in the CIA and the FBI up until the last maybe 10 or 12 years, and the Justice Department, that has to be stamped out. If not, we go from a great constitutional republic to a banana republic.
Well, and I think what is so shocking about things in your reporting, both with the Adam Schiff story as well as this James Comey story, is that these two both had what seemed to be like an established way for them to get this information out, instead of this was a one-off or they decided to get one thing out to an individual. But whether it be the House Intelligence Committee having staff do that for you, or with James Comey bringing on an individual as a special government employee so you could have these conversations with him to almost legally protect him, but then allow that individual to be your pipeline to the media. It's just shocking that that's what was going on. But I just want to encourage everyone also to follow John over at Just the News. Read this reporting. It's incredible. We read it here every day. And John, is there anything else you want our people to know about things that may be coming or what we should be looking out for?
Yeah, listen, I think the next thing I'm going to be focusing on are some documents that show that Hillary Clinton did not only face jeopardy on her email case. There was a several foundation corruption cases looking at her foundation as a possible pay to play. We're going to be able to tell people for the first time soon who was shutting that down, who was blocking it. And I think that's going to be an important part of that cycle of protecting Democrats, Hunter, Hillary, whoever it's going to be, Joe Biden, and then demonizing Republicans using the intelligence and law enforcement system. I think those new revelations will move the needle quite a bit.
JustTheNews.com is where you can go read all of that and be looking out for what John Solomon just told us. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will talk with you soon.
Thank you, sir. Good to be with you.
Jordan,
there you go. Do you see how much information there is still to be explained, still that needs to be, you know, testimony that needs to be gathered, people that need to be put under oath, and possible legal charges that need to come? And again, this is not just fighting a grudge. It's the bigger picture of a government that works for the people, regardless of your political views, that is going to treat everyone the same. If it's illegal for one person, it's illegal for the other person. And we're not going to raid some people's houses, but not other people's houses, because we feel like, you know what, there shouldn't have been any of raids of President Trump and those associates. But some of these guys on the other side, when you look at the information, you wonder why there wasn't action taken quicker. Instead, they were getting little slaps on the wrist. You need to be more careful with your documents. We're finding spies in your office from other countries. Just be a little more careful with how you share this information. You're telling your staff to leak classified information, as one whistleblower reported to the FBI, and no actions taken on that by the FBI. But they put warning outs about Catholic churches. I mean, just remember, that's all going on simultaneously. It's why we have to fight back. You know, when you have a bureaucracy this size, you have to keep them accountable. You have to keep them honest. You have to be willing to fight. That's what we want you to do by joining with us, so that we can fight those fights for you and on behalf of you at the American Center for Law and Justice. Go to ACLJ.org right now. Donate and your gift is doubled. We will have get that donation matched. So it is a critical time for you to support the work of the ACLJ. Donate today at ACLJ.org.
For 35 years, the ACLJ has fought and won for life, liberty, and religious freedom. Now we face new battles, from saving persecuted Christians to defending pro-life laws at the Supreme Court. But we can't do it without you. This month, every dollar you give is doubled through our 35 years of victory drive. Be part of this critical moment. Give now at aclj.org/win. That's aclj.org/win.